As I said, we have been moving through the story of David. We are coming almost to the end. We have a few more stories to share in David's life. And as we mentioned at the beginning of the series, I'll mention again now, we know more about David than any other person in the Bible. Even really more than Jesus. There are more personal accounts of Jesus' of David's life than there are of Jesus. There's a lot of Jesus' teaching. And if we include the Psalms in what we know about David, then it's just bar none. David is the most influential person in our Bibles. And so therefore, it's important that we get to know who David is and what David is about. And so today's story comes from chapter 9 of 2 Samuel. 2 Samuel chapter 9. And we're moving into David's actual kingship. He spent a long time knowing David without him being king at all. Most of the times he's been on the run. We assume about 20 years of David running in the wilderness for his life. But here we see, here in 2 Samuel chapter 9, David is now king. And David is sitting on his throne and he's looking around and wondering what to do next. And this is the story. I will be reading verses 1 through 7. David asked, "Is there anyone left of the house of Saul to whom I may show kindness for Jonathan's sake?" Now there was a servant of the house of Saul whose name was Ziba, and he was summoned to David. The king said to him, "Are you Ziba?" And he said, "At your service." The king said, "Is there anyone remaining of the house of Saul to whom I may show the kindness of God?" Ziba said to the king, "There remains a son of Jonathan. He is crippled in his feet." The king said to him, "Where is he?" Ziba said to the king, "He is in the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar." Then King David sent and brought him from the house of Machir, son of Amiel, at Lodabar. Mephibosheth, son of Jonathan, son of Saul, came to David and fell on his face and did obeisance. David said, "Mephibosheth." He answered, "I am your servant." David said to him, "Do not be afraid, for I will show you kindness for the sake of your father Jonathan. I will restore to you all the land of your grandfather Saul, and to yourself, and you yourself shall eat at my table always." He did obeisance and said, "What is your servant that you should look upon a dead dog such as I?" This is the word of the Lord. Here is David, at the height of his power, at the height of his life, really. He's flying high. He's having a great time, at least I assume, as the king, right? I mean, he's got the most power of anybody around him. And what does David do with that power? David looks around for somebody else to love. He looks around for a recipient of the blessings which he's received. That's what this chapter starts with. There was a, in my life, there was a couple who I'd never met. They were retired. They went to my parents' church. But I was going to seminary. I was headed to seminary, and my mom knew it. They didn't. But they began to ask a question. They started asking around, "Look, we're looking for somebody to bless. And we'd really actually like to bless a seminary student." And so, my mom, knowing I was headed there, asked them what they were talking about. And so they wanted to actually give a gift. And they didn't have much, but they understood themselves to be blessed where they were. And so every month, for the entire 3 years I was in seminary, I received a $50 check from Bob and Barbara Morris, who I'd never met. I'd never once met them. I met them at the inn when I was done with seminary. I went home and met them. But yeah, I never even met them. And I think it's kind of like that. That sitting from where they were, they looked out and they said, I think I'm supposed to bless somebody. That's what I think David is doing here in this story. David's looking around and says, I'm supposed to bless somebody. And so he, of course, harkens back to somebody specifically in Jonathan's family. If you remember, or even if you don't remember, I'm going to tell you anyway, Jonathan was David's best friend. He was the son of the king, but David and Jonathan were thick as thieves. And so they moved through life together. They cared for each other. As a matter of fact, Jonathan, on two different occasions, kind of saved David's life. Jonathan, these guys were best friends. And so when David looks around, he knows that Jonathan is dead. And he knows that King Saul is dead, and most of his family is dead. And so he just asks that question, isn't there anyone who I can bless who comes out of Saul's house? Anybody that I can bless because of Jonathan, because of what the friendship meant to me and what Jonathan did for me. As Jonathan and David parted, Jonathan, these were the last words that Jonathan and David said together as teenagers. And I think this is what is breaking into David's memory now. Jonathan says, go in peace, for we have sworn friendship with each other in the name of the Lord. The Lord is witness between you and me and between your descendants and my descendants. They make this promise of friendship that goes beyond just them, but goes through their descendants. And David says, I've got to make good on that promise. The interesting thing, most interesting thing I think about this passage is a word that I think we've talked about before, which is this word chesed. And chesed is the term that is translated in this passage twice as kindness. But it is a big word in Hebrew, and it has lots and lots of different meanings and lots of depth to it. So it means kindness, and it means steadfast love, and it means generosity, and it means extravagance, and it's just this really deep word that kindness doesn't quite grab a hold of. And most often when we find this word in the Old Testament, it's how God's love is described. It's the word that is used when we talk about the love of God. And so when David uses it here, he says, is there anybody that I can show that the best way to put it, I think, is steadfast loving kindness to, for Jonathan's sake? And when he repeats it, when David comes back to it again later, what he says is I would like to show somebody God's steadfast loving kindness. Because I think for David, he understood that they're one and the same. You know, as we get into this story, there's the boy's name. He's not even a boy anymore. But Jonathan's son's name is Mephibosheth, which is a whole lot of fun to say. But Mephibosheth is actually, the word itself actually means seething dishonor. Seething dishonor. And it turns out that when Mephibosheth was young, when they were fleeing from the Philistines, actually, when Jonathan and Saul both died in battle, the best word I can say is his nanny, his caretaker, was carrying this baby out in fleeing with him, and she dropped him. And what happened was he broke both of his feet, and he was never able to walk again. And so For his whole life then, Mephibosheth had to deal with this. With this truth about himself, that he was lame, that he wasn't worthy, that he couldn't even walk himself places. Instead, he lived with people helping him his entire life. That's the first thing you need to know about Mephibosheth. The other thing you need to know is that coming from Saul's household, the other way to describe him is enemy. And what I mean by that is that David has now usurped the throne of everybody in Saul's household, right? He's taken over the throne of Israel from that whole side. And so bringing somebody like that into his house, right, into David's house, like, wouldn't have been seen as a good move for a lot of different reasons, right? Some of them come on the part of Mephibosheth himself. He comes to David being afraid. When he gets called in there, what could his assumptions be other than he's about to lose his life? Because he's the last of the people who might take over from David from Saul's house. The last people who might overthrow David. And David taking him in is taking a real risk. Right? He's taking a real risk because who knows what this man has on his heart, right? What he's carrying from it. But what Mephibosheth does, of course, is he bows before him. As quick as he can, he says, I'm here to serve you. David responds with words that come up again and again throughout the Bible. Do not fear. Fear not. They are words that are meant to calm the spirit, that are meant to wake us up from the fear and the place we're at and bring us into a different place. They're words that we hear throughout the Gospels. Jesus says it over and over again to his disciples when they get unnerved. Right? The angels say it to almost everyone they can speak to. Right? Fear not. Those two words are gospel words. They're words that prepare us for whatever is coming next. They open our hearts and our minds to whatever comes after it. He says to Mephibosheth, do not be afraid. And so what does he do? But David takes him in. He shows him this kind of extravagant love in action. First, he gives him back all of the land that Saul used to have. He says, it's yours. Like, as a way of showing you God's steadfast loving kindness, it's all yours. And then he says, on top of that, you may come here. And you may eat with my sons and with my wives and here at my table, in my palace. This, what I have, my family, is yours to be shared as well. What Eugene Peterson, Presbyterian pastor and writer, has to say about this is not just greeting card sentiment. It has the substance of good earth beneath it and the regularity of 3 square meals a day to reinforce it. You see, it's often, I think, that when we talk about God's love, we equate it with just a feeling, right? A feeling of God's love in our lives, right? And some, there's nothing wrong with the feeling of love. It's certainly true that we feel God's love. But what this story comes to tell us is that it's much more than a feeling as well. It's real and it's tangible. It's personal. It's generous. It's uncalculating. It's edifying. We can taste it. We can touch it. This is the type of love that David wants to show Mephibosheth. And it's the type of love that he has received from Jonathan and from God himself. And that's how it should be with God's love. You see, when we have received God's love, when we know of that tangible love of God, then what we should want to do is to give it away, to share it, to pass it along. It comes somewhere from deep inside us when we look around at the blessings that we have received, just like David did from that throne. We say, how can I share this? How can I share what God has given me? Because I know it has been so, so much. And you know, it's oftentimes, I think, that when we talk about the tangible, when we talk about God's love being real, it's most often that we experience that love through other people. That when we know God's love to be something real and in our lives, we have met someone who has made that love apparent, who has been able to tell us, do not fear, and has been able to be generous or even extravagant for where we were in our lives at that moment. We often, I think, in the church, think about this only, God's love, only in like the loftiest of terms or the biggest of terms. We talk about it in about Jesus and about what Jesus did in his death, his life and death and resurrection. But it's more often that actually the people who are Jesus to us is not that story of Jesus, but it's other people who come into our lives for a moment or for part of our lives to be Jesus for us. And it wakes us up to what God is doing in our lives. Because God, we recognize that God has placed them there and God is trying to do something through them for us. So when Mephibosheth heard those words, do not be afraid. And when he understood the love that David was showing him, it's very possible that he was receiving it for the first time. Because Mephibosheth was an infant or a young child when he had to flee and when the father was killed. He has spent his whole life with a name like seething dishonor. And when God, when David turns to him and claims it and says, Mephibosheth, and then loves on him, he reclaims his name and makes him whole once again. I want to share a story today, and I'm going to invite you to do the same in a way. I want to share a story about some people. I'm reminded of them particularly at this moment because we're actually going to visit them. Amy and I are headed out of town to go on a trip of visiting old friends. And so we're headed to a place, and we're headed to Downingtown, Pennsylvania, which is kind of nowhere Pennsylvania, but that's okay. Like, we're headed to Downtown, Pennsylvania. And it's because they were, the Thatchers who live there have been a particular support to Amy and I in our lives. And I'll go back a little further. Amy's dad served a church in Downtown, Pennsylvania when he first got out of seminary. And so he served there, and he became great friends with the Thatchers. And they sort of took him in. He was young and naive and whatever else comes along with that, being a first time pastor somewhere. And they just took him in, and they really treated him like family. They had no other family up there, and they fed him, and Jackie, Amy's mom, of course, they took them in, and they became like family to him. They spent vacations with him. This was the type of generosity that they showed them. And so when we moved to Princeton, Amy thought it'd be a good idea for us to go over to the Thatchers. And the Thatchers became for us the exact same thing that they had for Amy's parents, even though they had no reason to do any of that for me, especially. Maybe for Amy, but not for me. They loved on us. They fed us. They'd take us in for weekends when we just needed to get out of seminary life, out of all the studying and all that stuff, and get out somewhere else. They'd take us in. They introduced us to their family. We ate dinners with their like extended family. All of that was just this generous offering that just amazed me at the time. That they would allow me unwittingly, they allowed me into their lives. No, I'm just kidding. They allowed me to be a part of their family for that time. And so I'm looking forward to going back to visit them again because of the part they played in blessing me while I was in seminary. And it's that type, I think, those type of interactions, those type of people that wake us up to what God is up to, that can say to us, do not be afraid. Come eat at my table. Come share with me. And so what I'd like you to do is I'd like you to spend about 30, 45 seconds. I don't know. I'll give you a minute. I'll give you a whole minute. I know it's a long time, but I'll give you a whole minute to think for a second. And what I want you to do today, as we close up, as the end of the sermon is our prayer at the end of the sermon, what I want you to do is I want you to stand up when you feel ready, and I want you to give one person's name that you were thankful for. One person who's come into your life and has given you some sort of blessing at a time when you needed it. I'm not asking for a huge, I'm not asking for a sermon. I'm asking just you to pop up and say a name. You can do that once everybody is standing. And if you can't say anything, just stand up and don't say anything. This isn't a pressure situation. Stand up. Once everybody is standing, we will say the Lord's Prayer together. Can we try that? All right. So let me start the prayer and then stand up as you feel led. God, I offer up to you a thanksgiving, a prayer of thanksgiving for all the people who have come into our lives at various times in various places, the ways that we have known your steadfast loving kindness through other people. So God, we thank you for the Thatchers.
Lord, I thank you for Leo and Marianne Strong.
Lord, we thank you for those who have been named and those who remain unnamed, the many ways in which you bless us and the ways you show us your steadfast loving kindness through others. And so we pray all these things in Jesus' name, who taught us to pray. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever.